Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 99 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her skin. Yep, that's right. And I just want you to know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate this podcast and review us, because guess what? I read these things. Love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
Well, so I'm reading the New York Times, and there's this article, and it's all about cosmetics. Let the buyer beware. Uh-oh, a little bit of that caveat emptor kind of going on. So suddenly I realized there's this brand new study that just came out that analyzed all the adverse events associated with cosmetics and personal care products. And whoa, we've got ourselves a whole lot of problems here. And what I really want to do is suss this out, you know, with everyone, because, oh my gosh, we're just slapping this stuff all over our bodies, our faces, and we really are dealing with an unregulated industry, and we really have to have a lot more advocacy for ourselves as we're going out and purchasing products. And I can't think of a better person to help us understand this than Dr. James Yannis, Jimmy Yannis. Ah, he is a board-certified dermatologist and associate professor of dermatology at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's a general dermatologist with a specialty and published research expertise in allergic contact dermatitis and oral diseases. Oh boy, you know, Jimmy, this is a big, big topic here. You know, women are always going out there and, yeah, just pouring out billions of dollars on all of these products, pretty unaware of what's going on. And I know that in your own work, you've kind of been on top of what's going on in terms of regulation and looking at specific ingredients in cosmetics. So I think that a lot of women want to know, does the FDA really regulate ingredients used in cosmetics?
Pam, it's such a great question, especially because the answer is no. They really don't meaningfully regulate the ingredients that are found in cosmetics. And to be clear, when we're talking about cosmetics, we don't mean just makeups. We're talking about lotions, shampoos, any of the things that we tend to put on our skin that's part of our normal everyday routine. So it isn't just foundation or eye makeup that we're talking about. It's sort of a stunning bit of information to recognize our own Food and Drug Administration doesn't really control what comes into the products that we use every day.
So apparently Congress only regulates colors that are added to cosmetics. Is that true?
Right. In terms of regular everyday skincare products, that's one of the areas that is the most meaningfully regulated. Otherwise, the FDA really only responds kind of like the police. If there's probable cause, if there's been a problem that's been reported by consumers repetitively, then they're able to act. But otherwise, there is no sort of front end, let's check out every ingredient that's getting ready to go into your makeup or your shampoo or your moisturizer to make sure that it works with what the label says it's going to do and whether or not you're going to get in trouble with it, whether you're going to break out from a rash or otherwise suffer with the use of the product.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder how many people out there actually go to all the trouble to complain. You know, maybe if you try something out and it made you break out in a rash. You just sort of threw it in the garbage can and said, oh, well, I must be allergic to that. Only to find out, of course, like 35 million other people were having the same problem. But I think it's sort of a pain in the drain to have to, you know, do that complaint. And I wonder if people even know where to do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, where do you lodge that complaint?
Right. Your point is extremely well taken. You'd much prefer to have it be sort of an automatic process where somebody was keeping an eye on these skincare products and what's actually in them. But it's pretty easy in our world of Google. If you just do FDA, you know, for Food and Drug Administration, and then report a cosmetic complaint, the FDA site comes up, and it's kind of scary at first, but it's really quite a beautiful site. I actually did a submission just yesterday, and it's really not that hard. It's a checkbox if you just do the FDA, you know, report a cosmetic complaint. And once you get to that site, they even give you the option to actually call up and speak to someone at the FDA to report what the product was that you were using and what was it that happened. But imagine, if you will, but it takes buckets of people to have used a product for it to really result in any meaningful change. And what's particularly spooky to me is even though the FDA has this reporting system in place, it doesn't mean that the companies, when they get the information, when the company actually gets that feedback that consumers have had problems with a particular product, the companies don't actually have to necessarily act on it. And even if the company has been gathering the information, imagine if you used a product and you called the company's helpline and told them about the product, they're not required to report that to the FDA. So it does leave folks in a bind like you described.
You know, sometimes, I mean, maybe I'm just, turning into a cynic, but I wonder if you... when you do that whole FDA thing, if it just goes into a black hole somewhere, you know, just, and I don't know who's collecting that data or what, or if they ever even contacted the company, or, you know, if the company is in some, you know, island in the Caribbean, you just can't get a hold of them anyway. I don't know. I've probably been watching way too much Netflix, but I'm just saying that I hope to God that, you know, someone out there has a little bit of this data. Because this is scary stuff, knowing that companies self-regulate and that we really don't have someone overseeing and helping advocate for us. So, you know, now how does the FDA find out if there's a problem with an ingredient in cosmetics? You know, if there's only, you know, voluntary reporting and less than 10% of problems are reported, it sounds kind of futile. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think your personal experience with having used a product and getting a rash from it and then just pitching it in the garbage is what most of us end up doing. And the way most companies have and consumers have adapted is they'll go down a store aisle or a cosmetics counter and tell the staff there or read the labels of the products and look for terms like hypoallergenic or fragrance-free or dermatologist-tested. One of my favorite smart aleck things to say about the dermatologist tested declaration when you see that on the label is they're not telling you what the dermatologist that tested it actually thought. They may have thought it was really pretty dreadful. Or another example is something that says it's fragrance-free oftentimes isn't, and there are really complicated chemical names that won't immediately seem like necessarily a fragrance on them. So the consumer is in a really bit in a tough spot to be able to find products that won't make them break out. But the usual starting place is things like looking for hypoallergenic or fragrance-free.
And we'll be right back with our special guest. But first, let me tell you that this episode of Her is brought to you by That's It Fruit and Veggie Bars. You know you need to get those fruits and veggies every single day, and we're not doing it. So you probably already had That's It Fruit Bars. Now we've got That's It Veggie Bars. They're fantastic. They're featured in four flavors, black beans with kale, peas, carrots, and corn. Each bar is under 100 calories, has 4 grams of green protein, and like their fruit bars, have no preservatives, are gluten-free, non-GMO, contain no fat, are kosher, vegan-friendly, and even have 4 grams of fiber. Wow, each bar contains a full serving of vegetables. These are great for snacks as well for your whole family. Want to try it for yourself? Make sure to head on over to thatsitfruit.com and enter promo code HER to save 10% off on any order today. They're only available online right now, but keep an eye out for them soon because they'll be coming to your favorite local retailers. That's thatsitfruit.com with promo code HER to save 10% off on any order today. Explain to everyone out there in HER podcast land, what's the gig with fragrances? A lot of people, I'm sure, are saying, now, just a minute. I love my rose-scented fill-in-the-blank, you know, body lotion or something. What's wrong with that? I didn't, you know, grow a third arm. Explain why that's an important thing, this whole issue of fragrance.
So it is terribly appealing to us, isn't it, to think about the simplicity and the benefits of things that are botanical. That you gave the example of the rose. What could be that harmful about a rose? But the problem is that we humans and our immune systems are designed to learn. So beautiful, wonderful, simple things like fragrances derived from flowers or essential oils, if you will, natural as they are, our immune system can learn how to become allergic to it. The example that most of us have heard of is when someone gets exposed to poison ivy. It's a plant. It's, you know, growing in nature, yet we humans, our immune system recognizes it, and we can get hot, red, blistering rashes. And obviously, you're not going to use a lotion or a soap that has poison ivy in it, but if you use something, for example, to wash your face that has not poison ivy, but in the example you gave, a rose scent, if you're allergic to that sort of fragrant item, you can get a hot, red, irritated rash. So it is natural, but when my patients say, but the product I'm using is all natural, and once again, my playful response, but trying to illustrate how important it is to say poison ivy is all natural too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So we're basically seduced by the fragrances, right? So why in heaven's name did we ever invent perfumes and rose-scented anything? I mean, where did all that come from?
Isn't that beautiful? Now you're quizzing me on on ideas from you know what I might have learned in grade school and in public schools and suburban
Texas.
My understanding and my training tells me that it was really because bathing wasn't a typical part of our ritual. So we weren't always the sweetest smelling thing. So it was part of our human culture to once those floral objects were discovered, that we would adorn ourselves with it. And ever more as a society, we've been drawn more and more to fragrances, and the concentrations and the amounts of fragrances that are found in skincare products over the years has increased. In fact, when we look at our Mayo Clinic data as a group about the things, the chemicals, the preservatives, or fragrances that make people break out with these hot, red, itchy rashes, the most common group overall of things that people are allergic to are fragrances, including these all-natural fragrances like essential oil.
Huh. Interesting. You know, in a study that was just published that analyzed all the adverse events associated with cosmetics, personal care products that were voluntarily submitted from 2004 through 2016 by consumers and healthcare professionals, they found that through 2014, they averaged about close to 400 a year. Now, these are, this 400 adverse events, right? And that was a 78% increase in reports. Oh, there was a 78% increase in reports in 2015 and a 300% rise in 2016, largely driven by all kinds of complaints about certain products that were associated especially with hair. So, you know, I think what's happening is people are getting a little bit more courageous about actually putting it out there and complaining in droves when they can. But that being said, some of those were really incentivized by products that were so egregious that people's hair was falling out. So that wasn't, you know, don't mess with a woman's hair, I'm just saying. And because you're going to hear from us one way or the other. The fragrance thing, I think, slips by, you know, people all the time. Because, like you said, I think it's going to take a lot of education for people to realize that so many of the irritations we actually experience with these products actually come from fragrance. So who knew, right? So, right. But, you know, there are also some examples of ingredients that have been quite troublesome and have been pinpointed as a center focus for problems and consumer complaints. So one of them has to do with an antibacterial, triclosan. So tell us about that.
I bet most of your listeners have bought an antibacterial soap or an antibacterial hand wash soap because it was all the rage. We want to, you know, be clean and tidy. But triclosan, even though it's been around for a good while, and one of the early products it was used in was a Dial soap, was that our immune systems recognized that people would become allergic to it. And additionally, it's recognized to be an endocrine disruptor. In other words, that it can interfere with how our body makes and uses hormones like estrogen, for example. So happily, because there have been so many complaints lodged and more research has been done about the worrisome aspects of triclosan in terms of the troubles it can cause, and also the fact that it's actually not a very good antibacterial, just regular soap does essentially as well. It's been banned from soaps, but it's curious that, again, hampered a bit, the FDA is by being able to only act on probable cause, or, you know, what's been reported to the police, called the FDA, is it remains in some other products, including toothpastes, that are marketed as anti-gingivitis to kill those bacteria that cause the plaque to build up. So problems still exist.
Well, you know, now that we know so much more about the biome, you know, I've talked about this, you know, countless times, you know, in the podcast, that whole wonderful collection of little critters, bacteria, viruses, and fungus that are actually quite good for the body, that are found on the skin, let alone in the gut. And what we don't want to be doing is messing with that at all, especially when we want to get, and I quote, squeaky clean, and we're washing our hands with all this triclosan, you know, soap-derived product. So I think that people are even more aware now of not messing with their friends with benefits, the 100 trillion bacteria out there that are trying to keep us in some kind of stable balance. So the triclosan, I think, is really strikes home to a lot of people, like, whoa, don't want that. What about a second ingredient called MI? I'm going to let you say that one.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, isn't it? Methyl isothiazolinone, and it has a slightly modified cousin called methyl chloro isothiazolinone. It can be so frustrating when you look at the backs of packages and you read these gigantically long chemical names that could be abbreviated, like you just said, MI, or it may be the full spelled out name. But they're preservatives, because I enjoy reflecting on we are living in a reasonably modern era where we never tended to open jars of cream like maybe our grandmas did, a jar of Pond's cream, cold cream, and that there would be, you know, a layer of green or black on the top, because there weren't always preservatives around. So preservatives help keep our products from going bad or getting these secondary critters. Perhaps they don't belong in your Pond's cold cream, from from growing and developing. But unfortunately, once again, our human immune system can recognize these preservatives. And I was terrifically interested in that article that you're the study that you just cited, because you mentioned that hair troubles or scalp care products were one of the biggest categories where there had been reported problems with skincare products. And in fact, methyl isothiazolinone, the preservative, is terrifically commonly used in shampoos. So it really wasn't a surprise to me that one of the biggest areas of trouble was the scalp in terms of hair care products. So there are many a shampoo that are out there now that don't have MI or MCI. And those, when we look at our Mayo data once again, the most common preservative, and it's really skyrocketed in terms of how often we see the allergy now, methyl isothiazolinone is now our number one most common preservative in skincare products that we see as the causes for these itchy skin rashes, whether it be on your face or, in this example, the scalp.
Huh. So, oh, good Lord. You know, when you're a consumer and you're desperately trying to find something that is safe, well, tell us about a wonderful product, as it were, an app that you've been intimately involved with, and that's skinsafeproducts.com, and the resource is available with that and the app. Tell us about that, because I think that that is a first huge step in helping consumers out there feel knowledgeable and more empowered when they go forth to purchase that product.
Great point, and thanks for bringing up how challenging it is for consumers to sensibly choose products that really are free of the top common chemicals and preservatives and fragrances that get people into trouble. Because like I mentioned earlier, the notion of hypoallergenic or dermatologist tested doesn't often mean very much. So we've tried to redefine that, once again, based upon Mayo Clinic data, looking to see, and we change how SkinSafe works in a continuous fashion, but we look at Mayo Clinic data as time goes by, and we look to see what are the top 10 to 15 most common preservatives and fragrances and chemicals that do make people suffer with skin troubles. And we call those products that are free of those top free. In other words, they're free of the top common causes of skin problems because of skincare product ingredients. So at our website, SkinSafe Products, you actually can look for products that have been submitted by other consumers, because there is an iOS app, an iPhone app, an iPad app, one coming for Android, that lets you snap a picture of the front of the product and the barcode, and if it's already in our database, we'll tell you if it's free of the top most common allergens that cause these skin troubles. And if it's not, then it goes to our data team, where we actually look at the hopefully very clear picture you've took of the ingredient label, and we pull that information in, and then we send you an email when we've processed it, and we tell you, is it free of those top most common chemicals and preservatives that can make you break out?
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, are dermatologists using this all over the country now? I mean, who's using this app? I know that consumers are going to be, you know, really into this, but who else is getting involved with SkinSafe?
You're going back to the history of where was SkinSafe born? Why was it born? And it was all because my dad had eczema or dermatitis, they're synonyms, and I'd go back to visit my parents in Houston. And maybe too much information, but I'd immediately run to his bathroom after the long drive from the airport. And while I was in his bathroom, I'd snoop around and I'd like, go, Dad, no wonder you're still itching. You're still using products that contain the stuff that you're allergic to. He was a pretty peaceful fellow. He raised his arms up and he said, good heavens, man, can you just not come home every few months and yell at me about the stuff I am using, that I'm, you know, I'm supposed to avoid? Why don't you build a database that tells me what it is that I can use based upon the skin allergy testing that I had by my dermatologist at Mayo Clinic, by the way. So different from what the allergists do. They poke you with needles to find out if you're allergic to dust and pollens that make you sneeze and have asthma. But patch testing tells us what chemicals and preservatives and fragrances a patient might be allergic to, causing their skin rashes. So that was the birthplace of SkinSafe and why dermatologists and allergists are the ones that are the primary medical providers that actually use it. Because if you're allergic to something like methyl isothiazolinone, and because it has those cousins like the methyl chloro version of it, how in the world are you as a consumer supposed to pick products that are free of that without necessarily spending hours going down a grocery store aisle or drugstore aisle trying to figure out these big, long chemical names? So dermatologists and allergists, after they've had their patient's skin allergy tested, will actually sign up for SkinSafe and type in what it is that you, in this case the patient, is allergic to. And it then spits out a shopping list, not free of just the most common things that people are allergic to, but specifically what it is that you, that particular patient, is allergic to based upon the testing that your doctor did for you.
I love it. So to learn more about this, run on over to skinsafeproducts.com, and you'll be able to look at the free online resources. And I'm just saying, you got to know this. When you're going out there, before you make a purchase, get your little hands off those computer keys and just look at skinsafeproducts.com and really understand what you're doing here. And don't be seduced by a lot of fragrances and pretty labels and stuff. Be really smart and strategic because, you know, again, if you don't have this knowledge, if you don't empower yourself with this kind of knowledge, we're in trouble. What can I say? And the other thing, too, is if you do have a problem with a cosmetic, like just you made a purchase out there, you've got, you know, it's really important to report it to the FDA. All you have to do is Google FDA report a cosmetic complaint or call an FDA consumer complaint coordinator. I'd go with the online route myself, unless you're into, you know, 22-minute holds with really bad music. So please, you know, just do that because it'll help all of us if we can just get our input in there, because it's not just about, you know, hair products per se. But this has just been so flippin' informative. Every time we talk to you, Dr. Jimmy, you know, we learn so, so much. Thank you so much for helping us understand what this toxic chemical stuff is in so many cosmetics and personal care products, what to look out for, and some really valuable resources. This has been just wonderful. Dr. James Ioannis from the Mayo Clinic. Jimmy, thank you for once again being on the Her Podcast.
Thank you.
All right, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com and take a second and rate and review this marvelous episode, because I read these and I love to get that feedback. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.